All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, December 27th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Yeah, work that time. We are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you win or continue playing on FanDuel or DraftKings. We offer a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that calculates optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. You can go check that out, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Still time to get in some NFL action. We still have a few more weeks, one more week of regular season, then some playoffs. That subscription package also includes our NBA projections as well, so it all falls under one $29.95 a month blanket. You're all set to go for everything you need in DFS. Okay, we're going to take a look back at Week 16, take a look a little bit ahead at Week 17 as we wind down the NFL season here, but there were some interesting things that came out of this week that probably do matter for going forward. The big story this week, obviously, was injuries. Both Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota leave the games this week. They're not going to. I guess there's some speculation. Carr, if the Raiders made the Super Bowl, he'd be able to come back. That looks
sad.
Yeah, it is sad. It actually is because I mean it sucks when anyone gets hurt for sure. So not going to like make one injury worse than the other. But
it sucks much worse when people get hurt who actually have a chance to win something.
Oh right, and the Raiders were right there. New England still hasn't clinched home field advantage in the playoffs. It looks like they're going to probably now, but it just stinks. Anyway, so Matt McGloin is going to fill in for Carr. What do we do with quarterback? Like, you know, if we're this late in the season, and for them, you know, I'm going to keep this like more of like a DFS bent, obviously, because
that makes sense.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. You got to stick on topic. But this late in the season, we get a backup quarterback. It happened a little bit with Tom Savage last week. You know, now we get Matt McGloin. We get Matt Cassel in Tennessee with Mariota going down. How do we walk everyone through the process of like how we go about like basically coming up with projections for these guys? It's this late in the season. Maybe their makeup isn't exactly like the player that they're taking over for. They're clearly worse. So, you know, how do we go about just maybe making sure we have accurate projections for guys like McGloin and Cassel going forward?
That's a good question. I mean, it's very, very hard. I think a good place to start would be to turn to Vegas and see how they evaluate the situation. Normally, you know, we model independently of Vegas, but in situations like this where things are so disparate, we just have no clue what Matt McGloin's going to do, right? Like, and nobody really does, but I have to assume that they have the tools to evaluate this because they're going to have millions and millions and millions of dollars on the line.
Right.
So I think that's a good place to turn for starters. You can look at individual player props, like for Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, and for McGloin as well. I think generally speaking, in McGloin's case, I don't think it's too big of an issue. He's up against Denver. I don't think even at 6,000 on FanDuel, you're going to play him, right? I mean, it just seems like there's probably better ways to spend your money.
Nah, I don't think you can play these guys. And again, we haven't come up with base projections for them yet. So I can't imagine though they're going to be these crazy points per hour. And even if they were, I'd probably just end up lowering it because you just can't trust these totally new situations. Now, McGloin does have, like you said, guys like Crabtree and Cooper who are actual good receivers, and that does help, right? It does help to have, you know, actual talent running down the field for you. It's not exactly the same. Well, it's funny. It's same but different for Cassel. Cassel actually has a track record of throwing passes in the NFL. Like, we have some idea of what he can do behind center. His problem is, which is different. This is the difference. If it was Cassel in Oakland, right, then the situation for me would be a little different. I would probably put him in that not Derek Carr, but not like light years worse, right?
For sure.
Because he has just been out in the field and kind of done stuff before and was the starting quarterback for a team for a season. It's just a different situation in Tennessee where they don't really pass that much to begin with. He doesn't have many guys to throw to. I mean, like Delanie Walker, Rishard Matthews aren't exactly lighting the world on fire. They do have a running game, which is easier to lean on. So all this being said, that two, you know, pretty relevant fantasy quarterbacks going down in the same week throws things into a little bit of a crazy town. And it also couples it with, you know, going into week 17, the other thing we really need to evaluate is which teams have things to play for, right? So there are teams now that, you know, we saw this a little bit with Dallas last night. Dallas doesn't have – it's so funny. They don't really have much to play for. They curb stomp Detroit anyway, but without having to really run many plays. But, you know, there are situations going into week 17 where you're just looking at it and you're saying, okay, There are some teams fighting for the playoffs. I'm going to go down that list in a second. There are other teams that are just totally out of it, so I'm not sure. But they've been out of it, so I'm not sure like what they'll do differently, except for just kind of run the season out. So, what do we, you know, what are some major things we want to look for going into Week 17 when we look at each individual team and sort of like what their motivations are heading into the last week of the season?
Yeah, I think we've typically broken them down across a few different groups. So there's the things that teams that have a ton to play for, right? So these are going to be your Detroits, like Washington, teams that are on the fringes of the playoff hunt that are not locked in. In the AFC, unfortunately, all the playoffs are already locked in, so people are kind of playing for seeding at this point. So there are teams in the NFC that still have something to go, and you know, it's still not very many. I mean, normally at this point in the season, there's a little bit more going on than what we have right now. But so anyway, that's tier one, the teams that very explicitly have things to play for. And then there's tier two of teams that explicitly have nothing at all to play for. Mostly that's actually just Dallas at this point. I mean, there's a lot of shuffling that's going to happen in the NFC in terms of, you know, the overall seeding. Both Seattle, Green Bay, or all three of Seattle, Green Bay, and Atlanta can also move around a little bit. The Giants are locked into their spot, I'm pretty sure. Actually, I don't know. They might change. That might be a seeding thing, like whether yep. they play Seattle or Dallas or whatever. Green Bay or Atlanta. And then there's the teams with absolutely nothing to play for that are bad, but those teams tend to just play all their players anyway, because what the hell? We're here, right? What are we, saving Matt Barkley for next season? Like, let's get him in there and figure out what happens. And so really the most dangerous teams for weeks like this, our team, mostly Dallas, I guess, is the one team.
And it's funny about Dallas, right? Because, and I said this, and there was a sort of a confirmation about this, but someone had asked this week in our chat room, they said, you know, what do you do with Dak this week? Are you worried that he doesn't play the whole game? And I said, I'm only not. If they had any other backup except for Romo, I would be actually concerned he doesn't play the whole game. But with Romo, I don't think Dallas wants to get him on the field at all and light up any kind of quarterback controversy. Like, because there's the downside, if Romo were to go out there, like even at garbage time, and just go like 5 for 5 right. and throw a touchdown to Dez or something like that, and then you have Dallas fans be like, he should be starting for the playoffs. I don't think Dallas even wanted to open the door. So like, and then it's funny because then Jerry Jones came out this morning and confirmed that and said he's not going to play. So I was patted myself on the back a little bit with that analysis. But that was the one thing I was like not really worried about them resting guys. Because they just don't want to open the Pandora's box of who should be the quarterback. So I'm actually not even too worried about it. I think for them, they're just going to say, we'll just run the ball, hope that no one gets hurt, you know, and just kind of like, just maybe just run the ball the entire game without Darren McFadden or someone like that, and then just kind of head out. So I don't think they're like a total stay away situation anyway, but their situation is unique because they just have like this other media thing that I don't think they want to deal with at all.
Yeah, sure. And so then there's also teams like the Pats where, yeah, do they want to win? Sure, right? I mean, it can't hurt to win. I think they probably look at the Oakland situation and figure it's not quite as, you know, not quite as scary as it maybe it was when they had a real quarterback. But, you know, and kind of a few dominoes would have to fall for that to actually work out against their favor. So, and they'll still have home field advantage against everyone else except Oakland. So it's just not really, I don't think it's going to be really front of mind for them. I'd probably avoid their key guys as well. But after that, I think most teams are, you know, pretty competitive. I don't think Pittsburgh would mind winning, although it's not crucial for them. Houston, I think, probably does want to win. They need every edge they can get, mostly because they stink. I don't know if people are aware.
I cannot believe they're in the playoffs. I'm just totally shocked that they're going to be in the playoffs. That's got to be one of the worst teams ever to make the playoffs.
Well, from a point differential perspective, it's up there. They have the fourth worst point differential in the AFC.
Yep, and they're 9-6. It doesn't make any sense. They're on their backup quarterback. Anyway, let's talk about some of the performances from last week and what we can take from those going forward. The two biggest running games actually occurred in the same game with Jay Ajayi and LeSean McCoy in the Miami-Buffalo game that ended up going to overtime, which did help Ajayi kind of boost some of those yards. He got up over 200 yards on 32 carries. McCoy went for 124 for 128 in a game that I can't prove it, but I think that Rex Ryan was actively trying to get fired during the game. Like, I think he was going first half. He said, let me see what I can do to just not make it out into the second half. Because they were just doing some crazy things on offense. Like McCoy at one point was averaging something like 8 yards a carry and just couldn't get the ball. Like, just kept giving it to Mike Gillisley. Like, I just don't, like, things like this are just, I mean, I was like more in tune to it because we played McCoy. And so I wanted McCoy to like be getting the ball. But at one point he was getting, they were just equal touches, and McCoy was out carrying him by like 4 yards per carry per touch. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, with guys like Ajayi, he plays the Patriots this week. 32 carries is a real thing. it's the Patriots. I don't know how much we can trust like that kind of workload in a game where even if the Patriots are playing at half speed, I'm not sure if we can totally trust it.
Yeah, I mean, Miami, one of those teams that doesn't really have a ton to play for here. You know, theoretically, maybe seeding with Kansas City. I haven't looked at the tiebreakers on that, but they're in the playoffs. They can't lose their spot. The Patriots really have very little to play for as well, so it's really hard to say exactly what's going to go on there. I mean, the thing about Miami is they don't really have a ton of other options, but it wouldn't shock me to watch them just go out there and give Ajay like a token 12 carries and move on. He's not a guy I would target, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think the matchup is probably just not good enough. Either McCoy gets the Jets, that's a bad matchup for running backs as well. So those two big guys on the week, I'm not sure it's going to totally translate into the next week. Bell, again, goes out there, just kind of does his thing. He just does, 20 for 122, a bunch of touches in the air. He plays Cleveland this week. How much do you think they save him going into a week where I'm not sure they have a ton to play for either?
I think they save him too. I mean, Cleveland is so bad. I mean, and
no way, buddy.
The Schneid,
yeah,
they don't have anything to play for anymore. Is my point.
That's a good point. That's a great point.
Now that they like this would have been their Super Bowl if they were coming into this game winless, but since they topped San Diego in a real battle, that puts San Diego in a negative point differential. They were break even before that. Poor guys. But yeah, so it's really tough. I mean, like Bell in particular has had such a big workload since he came back from suspension that it's kind of hard to imagine him touching 30 carries again. But the matchup is so transcendent that I have a feeling we're going to be sitting there and being like, well, if you give Bell 12 carries, he's still in the optimal lineup. So I don't really know what to do about that. But I wouldn't be enthusiastic about playing him either, unfortunately.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing, so if I'm just looking at our base projections, because you said it's transcendent. Cleveland's just been so, so bad against really just everything on defense. Right now in raw points, and this is going to change because we're going to lower this a little bit, but right now in our very first run of the projections, we have Bell projected at 30 points for on 10,000 salary. The next closest guy is David Johnson at a little more than 20 points. Again, it's going to meet in the middle a little bit, but really how much, right? Like he's not going to get lowered down 10 points. This just speaks to how bad Cleveland's defense is. So I think that's going to be one thing that we're looking at going into this week. Is like, yeah, is him as 12 touches and 4 targets enough against Cleveland? It might be. They're so bad. And some of these other running backs have their own issues. It's funny about Cleveland too. They're almost going to cost themselves the first pick in the draft by that if they were to somehow pull off a win against Pittsburgh, because San Francisco is kind of sitting around there with 2 wins and they play Seattle this week. So there's going to be a real battle for the number one pick in the draft. Unfortunately, Cleveland looked like it had, you know, like in the standings when they put those Y, X, and Z's next to teams to label them if they like clinched home field or if they the playoffs, they had like a triple Z or something like that for worst team in the league and easily locked up the first round draft pick. But not anymore. San Francisco is knocking on the door, so we'll see. That's going to be interesting subplot for this week. After those guys, some kind of more of the same. Jordan Howard, we liked going into this week. He had a decent game for Chicago. They ended up losing. He touched the ball just enough to kind of hit value. And they get guys like DeAndre Washington. There just wasn't much to look at for running backs this week. Only four running backs even topped 100 yards. And I think that's kind of what you see going into this week too. Less teams to play for. Teams spreading the workload out a little bit more. And this has just kind of been a theme for the season for running backs.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think, you mentioned a couple names I think that are worth highlighting for next week, particularly David Johnson and Jordan Howard. These guys are people whose teams, their situation hasn't changed, right? Like Arizona was out of it going into last week. They're still out of it now. So, I feel like you can just run David Johnson out there, business as usual for this next week, and you're probably not leaving any equity on the table in the same way you might be doing with Le'Veon Bell. Because, with DFS always, what we want to be considering is performance versus price. And at this point in the season, all these guys are priced to the point where to their previous season performance, right? And maybe a little bit for matchup. But as best I can tell, the sites are not like FanDuel has Le'Veon Bell at 10,000, the highest price for any player this season. They're not picturing him getting any reduced workload whatsoever, right? So for my money, I'll probably wind up playing guys whose situation hasn't changed as much as maybe some of these other guys.
On the receiver side, you and I went into last week with a no halftime challenge. Jordy Nelson, and you had Jordy Nelson, I had Julio Jones. I haven't checked the books. I mean, who won that? Do you know?
I think it was probably pretty close. I mean, I saw that Jordy Nelson had like 30 fantasy points. I assume Julio Jones had something similar, but I I haven't actually followed up on that. What did you notice what he did?
Well, it was really funny because Randall Cobb was labeled out maybe about an hour to go before lineup lock, somewhere around 12 o'clock Eastern. And at that point, we boosted up Jordy Nelson's targets, and he ended up showing up in all the lineups. And then we were like, man, it was kind of one of those like knee-jerk reactions to boost his targets because we thought that, you know, it wasn't just him either. Him, Devontae Adams, a little bit of Ty Montgomery. And then we kind of looked at it, and he ended up being in the top lineups, and we thought, oh, you know, do we overcorrect? And we ended up kind of just, you know, staring at it a little bit more and lowering it back down. And then,
well, and there's a game theory piece there, too, where you figure he's going to be very, very under-owned compared to maybe a more chalk guy like Jones. So it didn't actually wind up working out that way. Jones wasn't chalk, but you know, that's part of the consideration, at least for the optimal cash game lineup that goes on.
Yeah, so anyway, Jordy was great, 9 for 154, 2 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers kind of just continues to do his thing where he's just the best quarterback. He goes 28 for 38, 347 and 4 touchdowns against, you know, what we thought was a decent Minnesota defense, but they've really declined over the last couple weeks. Rodgers is one of those guys, and he got a little dinged up in the game, but he ended up coming back and playing. He plays Detroit this week, Green Bay. I mean, how much do they want to save a guy like Rodgers going into what looks like a pretty good matchup against Detroit?
I bet Rodgers will get his run. You know, if they win and Seattle loses, then they'll leapfrog them for a bye. So that's a significant thing to play for. He'll be out there playing.
Yeah, as of right now, I don't think there is actually a line on that game. Not coming through our feed as well. I'm not going to search around. But we don't have a line on the Green Bay-Detroit game. That could speak to maybe Vegas waiting to see if he plays or not. I see an early – actually, I take that back. I see an early line where it's a Green Bay -3. So that was with 46.5 over-under. So that suggests that Rodgers are going to just kind of be out there, like you said, doing his thing. The big one this week, going into this week with in terms of lines, is New Orleans and Atlanta. They play where it's, I think Atlanta's a -6.5, but they have a crazy over under 56. I don't think that's the highest I've seen all season on just like one specific game. Is that a game that where we can maybe look at just targeting as many guys as we want from that one? Because Vegas sure seems like they're just going to score in a game that, I don't know, just ends up maybe becoming a shootout.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because, I mean, Vegas is giving this the old Pro Bowl line where it's right. Like, whatever, man. Why is anyone going to go out there and play defense? New Orleans, nothing to play for. Atlanta, small amounts to play for. I mean, basically they're playing for the 3 or 4 seed. I think the 3 seed is somewhat significant. I do think the Giants are a significant step above whoever winds up in that bottom role, like if it's Detroit or Washington. Although I guess the Giants could theoretically drop down again. I haven't looked at that exactly. But, I mean, it's enough to play for that it would be kind of weird if they just sat everybody. I do think, I mean, on the Saints side of the ball, I think you can just stack guys. They're going to play everybody because, again, who cares? They're going to try and score a bunch of points. The Atlanta side, I'm going to have to look a little bit more carefully about the playoff implications before I decide if those guys are safe or not. And really, on the Atlanta side, I'm not sure who's safe outside of Matt Ryan anyway.
Right.
Like, you know, let's talk about Julio Jones, actually, because I think this is an interesting thing that comes up on the podcast frequently, which is these guys that are, you know, there's kind of these injury question marks or kind of performance question marks with a great track record from the past that kind of keep coming up a little bit short. Well, what's your take on Julio's situation right now?
I mean, I'm tempted to say, well, so what I was going to say at first was the problem with both of these teams, they just tend to spread it out so much that it's hard to necessarily trust anybody on the team. And you kind of point into that where it's like, where do you go, right? Because, you know, with, you know, the running back situation right. For Atlanta, they're fine just splitting carries between Coleman and Freeman for the most part. And then the wide receivers, you know, Ryan threw to, I don't know, this looks like 10 receivers, 9 or 10 guys got targeted. Jones only had 7. I watched the game. Look, I don't evaluate game film. Obviously, we're very clear about this. I'm not a person that is an expert at that. I don't, you know, I would just say I'm a fan when it comes to just watching guys like move around on the field. And Jones to me looked like he was full speed. I think the game just got away from them, right? Like they just didn't need to throw. They threw him a couple times early on the first two drives. You know, he was able to kind of catch sort of like those short possession things. They threw him deep a couple times. They just couldn't convert, and he ended up with 7 targets. It's probably too risky to think that he's just a 10-target guy, just with the way that Atlanta just deploys all of its assets. And so I think that's really the issue. It's just that they just don't need to throw to him like they did in the past, right? And I think that's more the issue. It's just that it's what a team needs to do as opposed to like what they have to do. Some teams just have to do.
Yeah, we talked about how, like, you know, it's generally speaking, most teams don't throw to the same guy over and over again because, again, on a game theory level, if the other team, you lose a lot of value if the other team knows what you're going to do, right? So it's one thing if you're Randy Moss and you could just jump higher than everyone and run faster than everyone and you have the best quarterback, right? So in that case, it's like, okay, well, you know, they're going to throw to Randy Moss, but no matter what we do. But yeah, I think you're right about the Falcons. Double checking the Falcons. I did read up a little bit on that while you were talking about whatever. I'm not sure exactly what. And they're winning in for the 2 seed. So they definitely have a lot to play for here. You can expect that all their weapons will be deployed to their maximum capacity.
You sound like a Star Wars movie. Like, yeah. Did you go see Star Wars Rogue One and that's where some of that verbiage is coming out of, or no?
I'm not talking about that. I really don't appreciate being mocked when I'm dropping science on people.
I almost paused the podcast because that pause was so long. And the same side
but,
of the
guy. With Atlanta. So, and Julio Jones, I think you're right about him. He wasn't even out there on all the offensive snaps. That's a little bit concerning for me. He played just 62% of the offensive snaps per rotoworld.com. Right. That was his lowest of the season. So I'm a little concerned about that, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, I suspect he also had the highest player prop at wide receiver this last week. So I suspect he'll have that again. And who knows where he'll wind up, you know, in terms of actually playing on the field. But he'll be a lot of people are going to play him this week, I would think.
Yeah, there's kind of a logjam of these receivers that you want to really trust to get, you know, 12 to 13 targets, and you just can't. And they're all sort of in the same range. Beckham's there, Brown, Evans, Jones, and then Jordy also. It's funny because Jordy, among all those, I probably trust the most just in terms of, like, quarterback and the guy looking at him and just sort of the way the game's going to go. We don't have him for the highest amount of targets yet, but I suspect he's a guy that kind of jumps up. And Beckham's kind of in an interesting situation too, though he might be covered by Josh Norman going into this week. So I don't know. The wide receiver is going to end up being, we just have to probably lower Julio Jones, I would suspect, just because just too many weeks now of him being injured and just not seeing the targets. And of course, that we just now almost 100% guarantee he has the game of his year with the second we lower him, which is usually how things go. The other thing about the Saints too is, you know, they have sort of the same problem. Now they ran Mark Ingram significantly more than Hightower this week, and now that's a couple weeks in a row of Ingram getting a lion's share of the carries. Do you trust that situation for him at all? Because it hasn't been a full season long thing where they've trusted him. You know, he's coming. He's 2 weeks away from 7 and 7 carries. So you know, three of his last 6 weeks, he has 7 carries per game. So I just don't know how much you can trust Ingram on the ground, because it's not like the Saints even seem to totally trust him.
I think you can trust him at least a little bit, right? Like, the thing you like about Ingram most is the goal line work and the fact that he punched in 2 of those touchdowns, vulturing them from one Drew Brees, who was in our lineup. I think that, you know, you can trust it more than you could have a few weeks ago. Is that really where you want to be for cash games? I'm not entirely sure, because it's not like he's been excellent on a yards per carry basis. I don't think that line is too strong in the run game either. So I don't know that you really, really love it. There's unquestionable upside, you know, now topping 24 points 3 times in the last 10 weeks. Like, that's really something on 6,000, but he's also gone under 10 points several times in that stretch as well. So I it's kind of a lukewarm answer. I do think his opportunity now is better than it has been at earlier points in this season, and I'll need to look at it more closely before I make any definitive declarations there.
Yeah, he's still only 4,400 on DraftKings, which is
really
going to beg you to probably play him in this kind of matchup coming off, you know, 2, you know, 17 and 18 carries, and he does get targets as well. So he's interesting. But again, you know, the guy that you can mostly probably trust is Breeze, and he, with all these, in playing in a huge game, with a huge over in a dome, it's going to be hard. His price actually does drop a little bit going into this week. I think it's going to be tough to maybe not play him again. He's only 8,200 on FanDuel, 7,400 on DraftKings, playing in a game with the highest total that he should be even playing from behind a little bit. I think I could see us going back down the breeze well again this week. And then the biggest wide receiver week was actually one Mr. Adam Thielen. Raise your hand if you saw that coming. My hand's way, way up in the air right now. He goes 12 for 202 for 2 touchdowns. That's way out of bounds. I mean, look, that's like one of the best seasons for any wide receiver on the season. So it's not even like we can say it's his best season. It's, you know, as good as anyone's ever going to do. What do we do with a week like that for a guy like Thielen, who he's been sort of hanging around their offense? He's been targeted in the past. Bradford will throw. Bradford's a decently accurate quarterback, all things considered. But how much can we really boost the guy off of just one performance like this?
I mean, I think you can boost him at least to some degree. Like Thielen, the thing you love about Thielen here is the 15 targets, right? Diggs had just the 6 targets, caught just 4 passes. So the fact that he went 2.5x on Diggs' targets, to me, kind of means that he's just who they view as the number one receiver right now. And, you know, the big question is, well, what's that worth? You know, the number one receiver in Minnesota this season hasn't really been worth a whole lot more than what Thielen's price is at 6,500. So I don't think you want to pencil him in for 200 yards, and he had a single target the week before that, and right. He didn't even catch it. So, you know, he's not a safety play by any stretch, but I think you'll see a lot of people go down that well for a big upside, because I think it's absolutely there.
And the second best game was by Doug Baldwin. Now, Baldwin's interesting going forward because Tyler Lockett actually is out for the year. How much do you think Lockett's injury, because Lockett before that was a pretty steady target guy, 3 weeks in a row, 6 targets, and then 9 targets, and then he gets hurt against Arizona. What do we do when a guy, you know, so Lockett's not like a target hog by any means, but that's a lot
it
of
was last week.
That's a lot of targets. Yeah. It's a lot of targets to redistribute. And Baldwin, you know, steps up, fills the void, and has a huge week. Do we kind of look at that Tyler Lockett situation and say these are going to mostly go Baldwin's way going forward? Maybe curse. I don't know. How do we see that situation?
I mean, Baldwin had 19 targets against Arizona. Yeah. That is so many targets. And Arizona actually does have a clear number one cornerback in Patrick Peterson, too. So I think that, you know, again, Seattle, a little something to play for here. I think he'll have a big week and he'll be very, very highly owned.
And finally, Bud, how was your holiday? Was it good? Good holiday?
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible. We had a bunch of people come up here and we celebrated. We opened presents. We ate cookies, even played some games, some family games with the whole family, while my brother-in-law John won his fantasy league while ignoring the game and getting yelled at by his wife the whole time.
So yeah,
it was good from top to bottom, I would say.
No one likes to hear about fantasy football sweats, but John actually had a good one. The mostly was that it was ruining everyone else's holiday as he likes to, as he waited
hey,
for Steve's
turn, buddy. It's your turn.
As he waited for Steve Smith to get one more yard, so he could win a season long fantasy league for the first time.
Not turn the game on. Why don't we all instead, like, who wants to watch the Steelers Ravens game? Why don't we all just sit around and play a big family game? And John's like, yeah, totally. That sounds amazing. I mean, Steve Smith's probably not going to score 20 fantasy points, right? And then it comes down to the third quarter, and he needs one more catch for 1 yard from Steve Smith to get home. And you know, it's like a whatever $500 difference for his fantasy league. And he's just sitting there, like, casually gazing down every once in a while.
While your sister-in-law slowly considers divorce. All right, we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. We'll be back again on Thursday discussing our Week 17 value plays, and then also on Friday discussing our Week 17 game-by-game breakdowns for everything you can look forward to on the slate. No Thursday game this week, so concentrate all of your powers of DFS and NFL onto Sunday at 1 o'clock. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. Go check out a free 3-day membership, just $29.95 a month after that. Think you'll be happy. Buddy, talk to you again on Thursday.
Bye-bye.